Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 22nd. I am Sarah LaDuc. It's Pets and Vets today, and joining us are Dr. Susan Sekuli of Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland and Mechanicville, Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs, and Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin. If you have a question about your dog or cat, you can give us a call. That phone number is 800-348-2551. You know it and you love it. 800-348-2551. Or you can email the show, voxpop@wamc.org. The phone number, again, for your puppy and kitty cues, queries, is 800-348-2551. Drs. Dallas, Sekuli, and O'Loughlin, and your pet questions coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in show. I'm Sarah LaDuc, in for Ray Graff today. Today is our Pets and Vets program, and here to take your calls are Dr. Susan Sekuli of Just Cats Veterinary Clinic in Guilderland and Mechanicville, Dr. Chris Dallas of Ancient Arts Holistic Veterinary Services in Saratoga Springs, and the retired but still rearing and knowledgeable Carrie O'Loughlin. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Hello.
It's
there.
Good to see you.
Hello, hello.
Nice to have you here.
We've been warming up doing our, you know, my dog stories and their animal stories as we've been getting ready to speak with all of you about your pets, and we are ready to take your calls. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Again, that's 800-348-2551. And you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. What do we need our pet owners to be looking out for in the spring, doctors?
The ticks.
The ticks. Yeah.
Well, I opened with that last month when you all were not here. Oh, my gosh.
It's so bad this year.
And actually, Sue, oh, there goes my mic.
You're doing okay.
Am I okay? Okay. Maybe it's my headphones.
Probably.
Actually, I did a whole thing last month about ticks, and I actually wanted to ask you something because I may have misspoken. Can you tell me what you are seeing with ticks and cats? Are you seeing much in terms of tick-borne infections in cats?
Oh, tick-borne infections.
Yeah, sorry. No. Sorry.
No. No, we're just seeing lots of ticks.
Okay.
Yeah, but they're still not.
They're not seeing much, right? No. Okay. That has been my experience. Yep. And then after I was here, I actually thought to myself, is that actually true? Because maybe that's just my experience.
I've always told my clients that cats don't get tick-borne disease, and then I was on the show here one day, and I said that, and some woman called in from Massachusetts, and her cat had Lyme.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I actually went home to
rare.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. It is very rare.
All right.
Truly,
I wanted to clarify
not one that.
That
we worry about much.
Yes.
However,
okay.
I love that collar that's out there. I think it works the best for the cat.
I just put mine on my cat.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm treating a cat right now for hyperesthesia, and she noticed that it started after a tick bite, which sent me down the rabbit hole of researching this. And I thought about my remarks here a month ago, and I wanted to see if either of you had any experience with that.
I have not diagnosed it myself.
Okay.
Chris, you just said you're treating a cat for
hyperesthesia.
And what is that?
Yes. So that is a condition where cats have this, it seems to be not so well understood. It looks like skin crawling, basically. They have these episodes where they will actually run around the house quite a bit, and their skin will crawl, and hyperesthesia means excess pain. That's kind of what hyperesthesia means. And it does seem like they're in pain. I actually went to a lecture about it with the nutritionist from Ohio State, who was one of my mentors way back when, and he is looking at low levels of GABA, I believe, in relation to this. I'm going to imagine you could probably speak to this better than I can, Sue, but right now acupuncture is giving this cat about 24 to 48 hours of relief, but obviously we're looking for more than that. So I was, you know, doing kind of a deep dive to figure out if Lyme could be involved. I don't think it is for him, but...
Yeah, we used to use phenobarbital, now GABA is probably a better choice for that. Let me go back really quickly. We have diagnosed anaplasmosis now in cats. Like that is something that is definitely, and in fact, my technician, Diane, cat had it last year.
Mm. And so where do they get that from?
Tick-borne.
It is a tick-borne.
Yeah, that's the tick-borne one. Yeah.
And how did the cat present? Just Fever.
Yep. Okay. And so it's part of our fever of unknown origin panel that we send out. And,
okay.
But we don't. It's interesting because we really Lyme is not on that. Testing
for cats.
For cats.
Interesting. Yep. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, yes, the ticks are huge this year.
they're huge and they're carrying things they're, other than Lyme.
Yes. Yes. And yeah. So protect yourself. Unfortunately, you can't use permethrin when cats are in the house, but yeah.
Are you guys ready to take some calls?
Sure.
You might as well. The phone number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. And Kimberly in Saugerties, you are on with the vets.
Hi, doctors. Hi, Sarah. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks.
Oh, perfect timing for my question. So I recently adopted a five-year-old shelter. He's an animal shelter. I mean, what a great establishment. This little dog had been through so much. She had had heartworm. So she went through her four and a half month treatments, was shipped from Louisiana up to our area. She's doing great with her treatment, but they had given us a six-month supply of heartworm medicine, which was HeartGuard. We are used to using Simparico. So my question, doctors, would be, she just got her first dose since in our care. Her next dose of HeartGuard would be May 7th. Would it be okay, given her history of heartworm, to switch her to Simparico next month? Because I am so worried about the flea and tick, and I don't know what other medicine I'm allowed to combine with heartworm to treat the flea and ticks this year, since they're so bad.
Yeah, you can definitely, I mean, they're interchangeable. So you could just, you know, forget about the HeartGuard for now. You could save it maybe and use it in the deep, deep winter when you're not as worried about external parasites. But yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And also the other problem with HeartGuard is it's the older style heartworm medication, and they're finding some heartworm that's become resistant to it.
Really?
So, yeah, it's ivermectin.
Wow.
So, ivermectin. Some, and especially if the dog came from the south, you want to make sure it's on something that's going to get those resistant varieties.
Oh, geez.
They did say if
they
did say if you use ivermectin on the resistant heartworm, it will get them, but you have to use it like 6 months in a row to get any lingering heartworm. But
okay, so what I'm hearing is just wait out the next month. Don't really think about the flea and tick treatment until I can switch her to the Simparico when she's due for her next dose of HeartGuard.
Yeah, or you could see if you could get a single dose of one of the other flea and tick medicine that doesn't have the heartworm medicine in it for this month.
And yes, then and switch. Just give her that extra layer of protection.
Just because the ticks are really feeding right now. Yeah. So you don't want
to wait.
Getting that tick-borne disease on top of everything else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kimberly. And you, when you were telling us where you adopted your new dog from, your line dropped out and we didn't hear what shelter. Do you want to shout out the shelter again?
Oh, so sorry. Yes. So this was the Saugerties Animal Shelter. Mm-hmm. And Ellie Moffitt is the director of the shelter. And she has a wonderful staff. And we have a bad habit of picking up dogs and seeing who wants them in the family, which is very dangerous. And we've adopted out two small dogs who had very important jobs. We had no idea how important these dogs' jobs would be. We had a family member who was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer, and boy, did she help the entire family. I mean, that dog has just passed, and the whole family felt the ripple. So the reason that we have this cute little dog, Evie, is she's a Dachshund Beagle mix, and she had the face of a Chihuahua. And the dog that we had adopted from the Saugerties Animal Shelter, we adopted her son and herself. And not to keep you too long, but they always say to keep two dogs together. These two dogs, they were like, please separate them. she wouldn't leave mama alone. So, you know, they went to two different members of the family and brought such joy. But because our cousin had just had her dog pass, we went to the shelter. My husband is the town of Saugerties supervisor, and he was checking on the progress of their new beautiful shelter that should be opening up soon. So I said, just stop in and see if they have something we can show Maria.
That's always a bad thing.
Or a great thing. Just going to end up with
or a
dog.
A great thing.
That's right.
And boy, if you want to talk about, I mean, she had bad luck. She was a stray on the street. She had heartworm. The doctors in Louisiana nursed her back to health. You know, it's God's work, really. And she came to us, and she was just instant dog, add water, and she's just this clingy, gorgeous girl, and our other dog likes her, which has never happened before. So you're right. It's a slippery slope to say you're going to foster or take a dog for someone in the family because you know they're going to fall in love with them, because guess what happened? We fell in love with her.
Thank you for your call, Kimberly. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-348-2551 is the phone number, and we will return to your calls after this quick check-in with some of our underwriters. Welcome back to Vox Pop. It's Pets and Vets today. The phone number 800-348-2551. I'm Sarah LaDuke filling in for Ray Graff, here with Drs. Susan Sekouli, Chris Dallas, and Carrie O'Loughlin, here to answer your animal questions. Ready for another call, everybody?
Sure.
Great. Let's go to Mai and Troy. Hello, Mai.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm
you got
so
it.
Glad. I have a cat who, and this is a very unpleasant subject, so I apologize in advance.
It's Pets and Vets, babe. Here we go.
Right? She's about 2 years old now. I've had her since the day she was born. She has some issue with her anal glands, and I've had so many cats in my life, and this is the first one I've had this issue with. If I want to brush her, I have to hold her tail down. If you scratch her back, you have to hold her tail down. And if anyone has not smelled that secretion, it's like a dead body, I think, pretty equivalent. So I'm wondering, do they need to be expelled? Is that just a weird quirk that she has?
I think it's a weird quirk from what you're describing. Like, you just go near her and you'll start smelling the anal glands. Is that what's happening?
Oh no. If I try to brush her, so it's contact with the back, so not just her butt, but like her whole back. If you try to scratch her, her tail goes up and she'll excrete. If I'm brushing her, and I get to the, you know, her back.
Yep.
She
sounds like she's just one of those cats that's very, very sensitive to any touching and manipulation in that rectal area. And when that happens, she just expresses them, unfortunately. We had it's funny because we had a clinic cat like that. And they would, everybody would know. They'd be like, don't go near her right now. She's prone to it. You could get in the habit, if she let you, to get them expressed, or let her express them, right? On a particular, wear a glove and then put a little paper towel there. And then at least, because once they're emptied, if she goes to express, there's not much in it. So, you know, that might be helpful.
So how would I?
Well, she'll express them, right?
How would you get her to express them?
Well, she's just saying doing it the same way you do it now, just on a schedule that you can predict. So, like, if you know you want, right.
Yeah.
So do what you do, but just be prepared, you know, with paper towel and gloves.
Fake brush her, get the smell out.
That's right.
Really brush her.
Then brush her. Exactly. Do a test run first. Get it out.
Yeah. Open the windows, turn on the fans.
And it is funny because we all joke about it as veterinarians. It is not something they tell us about in veterinary school at all. Seriously, like,
oh, really?
No. I think if they did, we'd be like, wait, what?
All right, Mai. Well, you know,
good luck with that. But at least it's they're normal, right? Like, she's expressing them. It's not like they're stuck and you're having anal gland issues. So,
Carrie, you didn't weigh in. Do you have anything to add?
No,
you're fine.
Oh, okay. I totally agree with everything. I would say that's
the good anal gland issue.
That's right. Yeah.
Thank you for your call, Mai. Have a wonderful afternoon.
You too.
Thank you. Let's go now to Denise in Clifton Park. Hello, Denise.
Hi. My question is, I had a cat and a dog,
as pets. My dog passed away at 13 years old in January. I have a 16-year-old cat. He is a male. They were both males. Since that dog has passed away, they were the best of friends. My cat is very verbal. He's a big talker. He is up most of the night just making these intense howling and all kinds of noises, mostly the meowing, the howling, all night long since the death of the dog. And he won't, there's no kind of soothing him. You can try and pet him. He won't, he just stays downstairs meowing. Any ideas?
I think you have to get another dog. And that's from not the vet, just the radio host.
It's got to be the right dog, though. That's the challenge.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be a little hesitant to do that. Just make sure it's not something also medical that might just coincidentally occur. You know, hypertension and hyperthyroidism are the two things I always think of with a cat that's starting to do some nocturnal meowings or whatever. So yeah, maybe just get a
We had him to the vet.
Okay.
We just had him like a week ago. He did have an ear infection, finished his antibiotics, but this has been going on just since the dog died. And I'm not sure the ears, not that he didn't need treatment, but you know, is so do you think really a dog or another
another dog.
Okay.
At 16,
okay,
introducing an older cat to another cat is sometimes really challenging, unless it's a kitten.
Really rough, I know.
You know, unless it's a kitten, that's like very good.
Or a pair of kittens.
Or a pair of kittens.
Okay.
Yeah.
100 kittens.
Yeah.
That'll solve it.
And one thing you might want to consider if you're thinking about getting another dog is seeing if you could foster a dog.
Mm. Yeah.
And then that way, if it doesn't work out.
That's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
You're not stuck.
Yeah.
Yep.
Good idea.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Really?
Yep.
That's great.
Okay.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, we have been looking at dogs. So, you know, we just were... I don't know. We were concerned about getting a dog with, you know, we want to make sure the dog likes cats. We don't necessarily want a puppy.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have been looking, but we just want to make sure. But I appreciate your answers and your expertise, and dog it will be.
Thanks for calling, Denise. Good luck.
Thank you. Have a good day, everyone.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-348-2551. Doctors Susan Sekuli, Chris Dallas, and Carrie O'Loughlin are here. Let's continue with Gerard in Coxsackie. Hello, Gerard.
Yeah, hi, Sarah. Hi, doctors. Thank you. I'm calling about 7-8 weeks ago. I adopted a 90-pound female Akita, a beautiful girl that's got zero aggression in her. We had to drive about 5 hours to an Akita rescue. They're a pretty specific breed, as I'm sure you all know.
Mm-hmm.
I've had two sets of Akitas prior, and I live with my Japanese partner who really knows Akitas well. So not till we got her home did we then discover she has an intense phobia about getting in the car, being even near the car, even going out the back gate and finding the car nearby. And she's strong. I mean, she's a strong, strong girl. So we haven't been able to get her to the vet. So I'm wondering two things, I guess, is any advice or thought about, you know, car training? But then secondly, any ideas about vets in the capital area or really south where I am, vets that might do a house call or even televet?
How far south? Coxsackie?
Coxsackie, yeah.
Oh.
There is a fairly new house call vet in the area.
Yes, there is.
That far south?
He's been good. Yeah,
yeah.
Really good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, look him up. He's 518 something, I think.
okay.
So might be around.
Sorry, what was the name of it?
I think we didn't know. We're not coming up
with
the
name. Yeah, we're not
coming up. Let me see if I can Google it.
I think it's 518 house call vet.
Oh, yeah, something like that.
It's literally that.
Yeah. And he's great.
Literally with the area code.
Yes, 518. Yeah. Yeah, and he's good.
Yeah, and then as far as the the training, I mean, it's really, you may want to consult with a trainer, but it's a very slow process mm-hmm. of desensitization, mm-hmm. figuring out at what point she starts to get triggered and stepping back probably two steps from that and slowly with positive reinforcement working her towards it and desensitizing. But that can take a long time, and you can inadvertently reward the wrong reaction, which is why it can be good to work with a professional, because mm-hmm. we can inadvertently reward the wrong way sometimes if our timing is off. So you may want to consider working with somebody to at least guide you on that if you're not pretty confident with your timing. And
what if you just fill the back seat of the car with treats?
Or Akitas.
Everyone says that, and yeah, she's
you can't get them that far.
That close. She's not motivated enough.
Got to do a trail.
Yeah, not enough. No.
Yeah.
She suddenly wasn't interested in that dried salmon anymore when she knew it was about getting in the car.
Yeah.
Is pretty violently.
Is she food motivated in general?
Generally, she is.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So whatever point she starts to clue in that this is now about the car, you almost have to back up one or two steps from that moment where she has that realization, and then you have to slowly start working her through that first step of the trigger. It's really tricky. Training through something like that is, you probably could do a little bit of research about desensitization and how to go about it, the steps about, through that. But, I've talked to...
And they say the breed is really notoriously kind of stubborn or headstrong, I guess.
They're beautiful dogs.
They are.
I just learned the term neuroplasticity.
Yes.
Brain.
Yep. We all have it. We all have it.
We all learn it.
And when you talk to therapists about working with humans, who have phobias, I mean, they go through the same, the same exact process. And it's really interesting to hear when you talk to a therapist, the way they will, almost like recreate a situation that is similar to the phobia, in order to get them to that, that one thing that they're afraid of. So I don't know that you could do that with a dog, but especially with a car, that would be a tricky one. But that's where working with a professional might be helpful.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I appreciate
it. That's interesting. And you just got her home recently, you said. She just came.
About 7 weeks ago. Yeah.
Wow.
And she's really otherwise done remarkably well. I mean, she spent her whole life really in a kennel, so she didn't know what a staircase was. Or
right.
She didn't know what, but she's a quick study. Huh. They're smart dogs.
Yeah.
What's her name, Gerard?
Sachi.
Sachi.
As in Sachiko.
Sachiko.
But, anyway, that's helpful. It's a slow go, I guess is what it sounds like. Everyone says put her in the car and take her to McDonald's. Train her that the drive-through window is a fun type of thing, but...
Getting her to that car.
Yes.
Yeah, can't get that far.
That's right.
And we tried, two of us tried forcing, and I think maybe the
problem was.
Oh, right.
Good. Yep.
Right.
Yep. Exactly.
Mm. All right. Well, good luck, Gerard. Thank you for calling, and we hope it all works out for everybody.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course.
Luck.
Have a great day.
Thanks.
800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Pets and Vex. Guys. Vets. Pets and Vets on Vox Pop today. Let's talk to Susan in Lenox. Hello, Susan.
Hello. I got a Siberian cat about a year ago.
Congratulations.
The breeder gave me some kitten food, dry food, and she's been on that for about a year. She's about a year old now. And I want to transition her to wet food. I hear that's better because it has helps hydrate them. But I don't know what kind. There's so many foods out there on the market. I've been doing a little bit of different brands, broth, gravy, adding some water to supplement the dry. Should I go? And then there's pate. I haven't tried. I don't know what all these things are. What's the difference?
Have you tried giving her a menu so she could choose?
Twice a day, morning and evening, and then she still has the dried kibble.
Yeah, capitalism is
well, what do we think,
welcome,
Susan?
Welcome to our world of so many different cat foods that are out there. There's lots of them that are reputable nowadays, so don't give up on it. I love canned food. We've had conversations every time that all cats should be on a fair amount of canned food. I don't think it needs to be 100%, but I think, yes, I would definitely. And the sooner you get her started on that canned food, the better, because she will develop a dry food mm-hmm. preference, and introducing her to canned will be more and more challenging. And she's still growing, you know, those Siberians, yes. those bigger breeds, you got another year. So I'm a little hesitant to tell you to switch her to an adult food at this point. So just introduce the canned kitten. It tends to be higher palatability.
You think I should stay on kitten food?
Yeah, I do. Yep, for a little bit longer. What's her weight and how is she doing? Is she spayed yet?
Is she what?
Spayed.
Yeah, she is spayed. Okay. She's about a month ago, she was about 10 pounds.
Okay. Yeah, so she's still on the smaller side, so I'm comfortable with you keeping her.
Smaller. She looks like a giant to me.
That's because she's got a lot of fur.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But, there's plenty.
Know what? There are some kinds that have vitamins added. Does she need added vitamins, or just look for, like, meat? Or fish, or some kind of protein without a lot of added junk.
That's it. Mm. There you go. It's a high protein. They're carnivores, so you want that. I'm not a big fan of grain-free. I think that's not necessary.
Marketing.
In the cat and dog world.
Mm-hmm. I.e. not a necessary fan of what?
Grain-free.
Okay, yeah, high protein and grain-free.
Right.
Yeah.
High protein, I think, is important, and she needs that. But the grain-free portion, I do not believe she needs. Any more comments you got? Yeah.
I used to think Fancy Feast was, I used to say it was, you know, McDonald's for cats. And then I was at a lecture with a dietitian who said, no, Fancy Feast is a great food for a lot of cats, especially diabetics. It's very low in carbs. Yeah.
I like to say Fancy Feast for when they don't feel good. They don't want to eat, because they'll always eat the Fancy Feast. I don't know what they put in that one, but they love it.
Yeah. Even though it's cat food, maybe the Akita needs some Fancy Feast in the car.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm still stewing on that one. Yeah.
I do have to say, I tell my clients to avoid some of the, like, you know, celebrity and, you know, named diets, because they're celebrities. They're not dietitians. Mm-hmm. So, and there is something called the AFCO.
Yeah. Good point. Thank
seal
you.
Of approval. It's sort of like the Good Housekeeping seal of approval for pet food.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
It's AFCO, AAFCO. I don't remember what it stands for, but that is a way of determining that it's a properly balanced diet.
True.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then how much? Maybe a small can and split that between the two meals, plus some kibble on the side?
At least I typically will say up to 6 ounces of canned food a day per cat.
Okay.
And that's the larger can,
and
is
that's,
a 6 ounce.
Yeah, the five, yeah, they're 5.5 ounce ones or two of the smaller cans. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to gain the weight from the canned food. It's mostly from the dry food.
Right.
So that's why you want to get her shifted so that she'll prefer the canned, or at least eat it as well.
Yeah, and you can do a variety. You don't have to find a brand or a flavor. Or, you know, there's so many different, you know, companies out there now and formats. Like you said, there's the shredded and the pate. If she likes them all, feed them all. You know, you don't have to stick with one. And I think you're probably better off with variety anyway. So
good luck with her. Sounds like you're doing a great job, doing a lot of research on your own.
She keeps me laughing.
That's great.
Thanks for the call, Susan. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, thank you very much.
800-348-2551. Dr. Susan Sekouli, Chris Dallas, and Carrie O'Loughlin are here to answer your pet questions. Let's talk now with Ron in Albany. Hello, Ron.
Yes, hello. We have a tabby cat. She's over 15 years old.
And from time to time, she has like epileptic shaking fits. And we're just wondering if it's because she's old age, or is it because of the tick and flea tick and the flea and tick collar. Unfortunately, about 3 or 4 years ago, she had a flea infestation. So the vet told us that we should get this name brand, flea and tick collar. And it's rather expensive. At PetSmart and Walmart, it goes for over $60. And we were just wondering, are there any alternatives? And is it all, sometimes these chemicals can really hurt a cat, couldn't they?
The million dollar question.
That's a lot in all of that.
Yeah.
Going back to the seizures.
Yeah, tell us
I
about
would tell
those.
You
yeah.
that if the seizures aren't occurring when the collar's off, then that tells you your issue, right?
Well, we don't take off the collar. You know, it's not something that.
Right, but it's the only way for you to tell.
All the time, because she does go outside on an occasion when the weather is nice.
Yep.
But she's. Happens to be an 8-month flea and tick collar,
yes.
And it's like $60 or $65 at yes. each of those stores that I mentioned.
Yep.
I mm-hmm. won't say the name, but are there some chemicals that are, you know, that are bad for cats, or do cats respond to all just about the same? Are there any pet friendly that really work against T and Flex? Fleas and ticks.
I mean, I would say that it just every individual is different. So if you think that she's reacted to that specific chemical, you could try a different one. I can tell you as an integrative/holistic vet, a lot of my clients have tried natural, quote unquote, natural, you know, products for flea and tick preventative. They sometimes work for fleas. They don't work for ticks. Ticks will go through any essential oil. And I don't particularly feel comfortable spraying those things on cats. I feel more comfortable with conventional products because cats are more sensitive to things in general. So if that collar, if truly your cat is having a reaction to that collar,
well,
you
some
could...
of the name brand collars really, like they use real chemicals, you know. I always thought there were basic 3 or 4 that were effective. And that in the ratings, maybe Consumer Reports or someplace mm-hmm. that had ratings, you know, would say that certain chemicals are more effective than others
mm-hmm.
and less harmful to cats, and cats will have a negative reaction. The problem was that when she got the flea and tick collar stuff from the vet, they strongly recommended this name brand flea and tick thing, and we've stuck with it all these years. She wasn't having the epileptic shaking fits in the beginning, but it could be just a thing that she's really old, couldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that could be just age-related, in which case the collar may not really be playing a factor.
In which case, we may as well stick with the
right,
collar.
Right, exactly.
No, yep. It is expensive. It's yeah. effective.
Yes.
And honestly...
And we're not sure of any other... collar that would work any better. We did go to Walmart and get like $15 ones in the beginning.
Correct.
Right.
But
yeah.
then we were told that we called up the vet and they said no, you should stay with what they were recommending.
Yeah.
They
yeah,
must that, have stock that, in the company or something.
Yeah, no, that collar is price fixed no matter where you buy it.
Yeah.
So it's gonna be the same price anywhere. Yeah. And it honestly, in my opinion, is way better than the cheap ones you buy,
mm-hmm. true.
You know, in a pet store. And the only side effect I've ever seen a cat have, and one of my cats had it, is some hair loss
yeah.
mm-hmm. Where the collar lies. So I think it really is a safe product.
Yeah.
Thank you for your call, Ron. We are up against an utter writing break, but Pamela, Nate, and Charlene, we're coming back for your calls. It's Pets and Vets on Vox Pop. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Pets and Vets on Vox Pop this afternoon. I'm Sarah LaDuke here with Drs. Susan Ciculli, Chris Dallas, and Carrie O'Loughlin. We have left Pamela on hold for quite a little while. It is your turn now, Pamela from Gardner, Mass. Welcome.
Hi, waiting was nothing.
Okay, great.
The question about cat sedation during air travel. My cat flies back and forth with me from Texas to Boston several times per year. And at the last airport that I went to, they told me that sedated cats are not allowed. This is a 11.3-ounce cat that gets 2 mils of gabapentin, one at nighttime, 12 hours before the flight, and then during the flight. Is this considered sedation, and is this dangerous? The cat's a very good flyer.
Yeah, tell him it's not a sedation.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Just a chill pill.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It really is not sedation. We used to use sedation, like acepromazine or something that really knocks them.
Oh,
so
okay.
I think that's in their mind of like, oh, they're not going to be responsible for what happens when this cat has a reaction to that particular drug, but I must say, gabapentin's wonderful, you know, right?
It just... Thank you so much. I was guilt-ridden the last time.
No, just tell them it's a calming agent.
That's
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yes.
It's like THC.
And you'll get every veterinarian saying the same thing for you, so don't worry.
Okay, thank you so much. No, I won't be guilty.
No.
Have a great day.
You too. 10 out of 10 vets say, go for GABA on the plane. All right, perfect.
Totally.
I was on a plane a week ago, and there were two cats, and they could have used some gabapentin.
Sure. I was going to say, that's a public health decision.
Yeah. Oh.
Well, they that can't possibly funny. Understand what's happening.
Yeah.
We barely do.
Yeah.
Let us go now. Oh, let me give you the phone number, everybody at home. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. If you have something you're hoping to ask about your pets, give it a go. That's the number. Nate and Lee, you're on.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
We're all right. How are you?
Good. So I actually just was calling in. So I have a French bulldog.
Congratulations.
He's about 7.5. I love him. He's the sweetest guy. But about 3 weeks ago, he started like showing, he seemed like he was in pain and really wasn't moving around. And then the next day, he literally had no control of his back legs. He was just dragging himself around, and his legs were limp. The vets really had no idea what was going on. They thought it was gas, and then the next day they did an X-ray and thought that it could have been a chipped vertebrae. But I brought him to get acupuncture actually, and he made like a miraculous recovery in like 2 or 3 days. Also with a Chinese steroid from Bilmar. So I was wondering if you guys have run into any of these issues of a dog just suddenly becoming paralyzed from the waist down.
Yep.
Yep.
Whoa.
All the time.
Yeah. So usually
that's good to hear.
Yeah. There are several things that can cause it, but the most common, especially if they were showing pain beforehand, is a disc. So it's the cushion between the bones in the back, and it slips, and it can either push on pain nerves and cause pain, or if it pushes on the spinal cord, it can actually cause paralysis. Mm-hmm. Yep, acupuncture is great treatment for that, as Chris will tell you.
Yeah, and then the other thing was...
Yeah, I was kind of a skeptic before that, but they said that there might have been like an issue between his L4 and L5, I guess.
Okay.
They did the acupuncture on a Friday. On Saturday, he started taking a few steps, and then by Sunday, he was back up on his feet walking like normal.
Yeah. I have seen some crazy responses with acupuncture, things that they did not teach us about in acupuncture school. And I tell people if their dogs go down to like come to my house and find me, I want to get needles in them within 24 hours if possible, because I can have them up and walking within a couple of hours. It's insane. It's really incredible.
That's great.
I was a skeptic before, but now I'm not.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it is. You're lucky that, I mean, it doesn't always work out that way. But was this recently that this happened?
Yeah, it was about 3 weeks ago.
Okay. I would still keep him quiet.
And then
Yeah, I would still keep him quiet. You know, he should still be on rest. because we don't quite know what happened in there.
Yeah, we're not letting him walk up any stairs or anything. We're just kind of like, we're letting him, I carry him outside for the walk still. But it seems like the acupuncture was really the thing that, the acupuncture and some Chinese supplement that they gave him. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what it was.
Yeah, that's great.
That's excellent.
Wonderful.
Thanks for calling, Nate.
Yep. Good outcome.
You're welcome. Thank you, guys.
Of
Have
course.
A nice day.
You too. Are certain breeds, like are Frenchies prone to that kind of thing, or mm-hmm. certain breeds more prone to it than others?
They're the what they call the chondrodysplastic breeds, which are the crooked-legged dogs, short mm-hmm. crooked-legged dogs, yeah. like bulldogs and
dachshunds
are the, you know, the poster
yeah.
child.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
Shih
even
Tzus,
even
yeah.
things like beagles, like people
sure.
don't think about beagles,
yeah. Yeah.
but beagles are very prone to it too. They yeah. just, Bassets? They don't, because the chondrodysplastic means their cartilage forms abnormally, and the disc material in the back is made of cartilage. Mm-hmm. So they just have weak discs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But it can happen to any, I've seen it in almost any breed, but those are the ones that are most common.
Yeah.
800-348-2551. We'll go to Charlene in East Hampton. Hello, Charlene.
Hi. I just want to share some information, and I don't know if the doctors had ever run across this, but I have a 10-year-old Cairn Terrier, and probably 7 of her 10 years, she's been prone by severe allergies. I mean, the paw licking was one thing, but, you know, she had hyperpigmentation on her belly and itching all the time and butt scooting and you name it. So I go to a group of female vets, and they just about tried everything. And she, between monthly Cytopoint shots and medications and steroids and everything. And one day I had to bring her for a routine physical because, of course, she was itching again. And they had a visiting vet, and she happened to be the one that saw me. And when she came in the examining room, she said to me, "What are you feeding her?" And I always fed her high-end canned wet dog food. And I told her, and she went over to her computer. She was really funny. She was like a drill sergeant. And she started yelling, "Peas, peas." And I said, "What?" And she said, "The dog food has peas and potatoes in it." And I said, "Well, but I thought it was healthy. It was, you know, I can't remember what it was, a chicken mixture or something." And she said, no, you can't give her peas. Well, anyway, long story short, the vet, that visiting vet is gone. I haven't seen her again. I'd love to see her again. But I've taken the dog totally off anything with peas and potatoes. She hasn't had an allergy since.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, based on the based on the distribution of what you were describing, your dog's itchiness, I was instantly thinking this sounds like a food problem.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just based on the parts of, you know, your dog, where on her body it was bothering her. So food allergies are common. The pea thing, I have not necessarily.
Yeah. It's usually more of a protein issue.
Exactly.
But yeah. peas or pea protein is in
We were
my
right
smoothie.
At the point they wanted me to take her for allergy testing in Boston.
Yeah. Mm.
And I said, you know, at my age, do I really have to do that? And they said, well, you know, how much do you love your dog? And, but the thing of it is, I've done so much research and reading, and nobody had ever mentioned peas before.
Yeah. I mean,
but
peas,
I just
as far as
tell people.
Yeah, peas is, as far as I know, the only thing I've heard of recently with diet is peas being bad for dogs' hearts. Because a lot of dogs that are put on a diet restriction because of food allergy, a lot of the limited ingredient diets use peas as their carbohydrate. And it's turned out that they think that might be one of the causes of the heart disease in dogs.
Grain-free.
Yes.
So we had gone through specialists that said to us, no dairy, no chicken, no beef. And we were going through all of that testing for years and years.
Yep.
And the pea thing is
seems to be solving it.
Yeah, it. You know, I've seen
but
some
you
weird.
Know, wait a minute, I got to tell you this. I got to say this. Do you know how difficult it is to find dog food without peas?
Peas.
In it?
Yeah.
I've never tried.
Okay,
I've
it's like cat food without fish.
Yes.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
Or cat food without poultry byproducts. Yeah,
that's interesting.
I knew a dog once that had severe allergies, and it turned out it was allergic to the people's well water.
Yeah.
It's the only dog I knew that was allergic to water.
So there you go.
So they had to put the dog on bottled water. Yeah. So they can be allergic to anything.
Yes, including humans.
Yeah,
right.
I've heard of that.
Yeah.
So it's good thing. It's good thing you discovered. That's great. Discovered the issue.
It's funny that the vet clued into the peas.
Yeah.
That's kind of funny. Peas.
Well, she's. I don't know why they do that, but she's like, she's so healthy now, and she's so at peace.
That's great.
And it's like I feel like I have to put an ad in the paper and explain to people.
Thank you for sharing that. That's a great story.
Yeah,
thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's great.
Bye-bye. At peace
without peas. At peace with the
peas.
I know. I knew it.
I know.
That's what you're laughing at.
All righty. I do think we have time for one more call. Let's go to Jason in Middletown. Hello, Jason.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I have a 11-month-old Jack Russell Terrier.
Oh.
And I don't know at my age what I was thinking about getting.
Well, that'll happen.
At any age. Really? No,
yeah,
no.
Right.
I'm kidding. I like them.
Bundles of energy. Yeah. That's all I picture.
Yeah, I don't have puppy energy anymore, but I'm working on it.
No, I meant to.
But anyway, you go online and I heard you say to the lady with the cats about the grain-free. You hear grain-free, not grain-free. Dogs shouldn't eat chicken because they're allergic to chicken. It's bad for them. I'm so confused. Besides the water dishes, that's a whole nother thing. That they want you to biofilms, and in 4 hours your water is poison for the dog. I mean, I'm so confused. You know, fresh food versus canned food versus dry food.
Yeah.
He's looking for a definitive position on what his animal needs to eat and drink.
Some kind of direction from somebody who I trust, and that would be you guys.
On food, is that what you're looking for help with food?
Yeah, mostly food. I think I've solved the water issue. I just use a glass
bottled
bowl.
Water.
That seems...
Just kidding.
Oh, bottled water?
No.
Oh.
So the main thing that when you mentioned grain-free, definitely there's no reason for a dog to be on grain-free food. So that's a no.
Yep.
Everything
so
else,
good for the dogs.
Yes, yeah, they're omnivores. They're omnivores. They should be eating everything,
all the things.
And chicken is not necessarily bad. It's just if your dog happens to be allergic to chicken.
Mm-hmm.
I had dogs that lived on chicken-based diet for 15 years. So, and then besides that, the sky's the limit. There's so many different diets.
Yeah.
It's I always say if you find something that works and the dog likes it. Go for it.
Stay with it.
Yeah. Don't try anything you can't afford regularly, because then why?
The only thing the dog doesn't like, I tried duck, and she turned her nose up at that.
Well, you know, it's an oily fowl.
And I'm an advocate of feeding all the things, like rather than find one brand and stick with it, which I find a lot of dogs.
Yeah, I heard you say that too, and I thought that's a great idea.
Yeah,
kind of what I'm.
They get sensitive. They get sensitive stomachs. They get, you know, then they can't handle other new things. I love just switching up brands, switching every day. Give them a little snack of what you're eating on top of what dog food you're feeding. Use the canned. Use the dry. You know, use it all. And usually, if you're feeding dry food, you do often have to transition when you're going from one brand to another or one flavor to another. I do find you do have to kind of combine them for a little while. I don't know why, because that doesn't happen with canned food. There's something about the dry food.
Or you can have guest dogs at your house, and then your dog will only want to eat whatever dry food they have.
Right. But have fun with it. No grain
food. She only seems to eat dry food at night when she's done eating her regular dinner and she wants a little snack. So I could. It takes a long time to go through like a 5-pound bag.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Jason. We are out of time for today.
Wow.
I wish that 11-month-old Jack Russell was in the studio. No, I don't, but kind of I do. We are out of time, but I want to thank everyone who called. Thanks to our doctors, Carrie O'Loughlin, Susan Sicculi, and Chris Dallas. This was a lot of fun. Always great to see you. Thanks for being here. Support for Vox Pop comes from Nona and Oma's Albany Culinary Boutique at Crossgates Mall, celebrating local and regional food makers, specialty flavors, and the tools that help keep people gathering around the table. NonaandOmas.com. and good friend Ecological Gardens Niskayuna, a residential and commercial garden design service helping clients grow biodiverse and sustainable garden habitats across the Capital District. More information at goodfriendgardens.org. Thanks again for joining us today. Our engineer has been Mike Bowen. Your calls were answered by Andrea Leon. I'm Sarah LaDuc. Tomorrow on Vox Pop, it's a gardening show. Ray will be back. That's at 2 p.m. And up next, 51%.